Welcome to the Wisconsin Wrestler Podcast with your co-hosts Teague Fenwick and Steve Lurkwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Wisconsin Wrestler Podcast. I'm your host, Teague Fenwick, coming to you from Holman. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Lurkwin. Steve, great to be here. I mean, is it great to be here? It's the last podcast of the season, technically.
Well, I'm always pumped to be here for a podcast, and it is a little sad. It's the last one of the season, right? For me, season four. For you, season five. And Teague, I'm a little worried, though. It sounds like, are you going to make it?
We've had worse this year. I'm just glad to say, I mean, by the end of team state, I mean, I have to thank the D2 semifinals for where I am right now. I left it all on the mic this year, and that's all you can ask for, right?
Right on.
Steve, gear real quick. Looks like we got some SWC apparel. I finally went with the River Valley.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, I know why you wear it every single day, because it is a nice flannel.
Well, let's not go crazy. I don't wear it every single day.
Every other, sorry.
Well, yeah. It's in my school repertoire with once a week. And I lied. Last time I said I don't wear them until I put them on for the podcast. And actually, you're wrong. I was wrong. I apologize. I didn't mean to lie to everybody. But the River Valley flannel I wore beforehand.
Yeah, it was a hard pass for a while for me, like to where it was hard to not put it on, but this will be part of my regular repertoire now for sure. Just like you.
Well, I have two things on. I think I wore this one before, Teague, but I got two from the state meet. I got the Prairie du Chien hat, which is pretty sweet. I got a big melon, so some hats just don't fit my head well, and this one fits pretty nice. And then I got this one. I can't remember when we got this one. I think we got this at an individual state, but I got Muskego Wrestling on.
Hey, shout out to Coach Sean Fortman for the Muskego hookup. We also have Muskego Girls shirts on the way. Well, maybe not on the way. I need to text someone our addresses, but we will be getting right those on as well.
Yeah, I saw you picked up a green shirt this weekend. I don't know if you were trying to hide that from me. Green is, by the way, is my favorite color. And I saw you got one and I didn't. I was a little bit worried on that one, but that's all right.
Coleman folks.
That's all right.
I do have to say, before we get into wrestling real quick, Steve, first day of track season today, which,
right on.
Yeah, got right into it. Got about 50 kids on Bangor's team, and first time coaching in about 5 years. And I'll tell you what, it feels really good. I was really worried about, you know, the post wrestling season transition. Like, am I going to feel a little out of it right away? But
yep.
Thankfully, it's a curse sometimes, but it's a blessing that I'm a very in the moment person. Because once I went in there to that team meeting and we just got going with the warmups, I was locked in. I'm like, all right, track season, baby, let's go.
Right on.
A funny story. And last time I coached, I was 24 years old, and I started when I was 20. So a lot of kids just called me Teague or Coach Teague.
Yep.
And I was thinking, okay, I'm 29 now. Maybe we find a way to change that. And at the meeting 2 weeks ago, I said, maybe you can call me Teague. I don't know. And I walk into the meeting today, and one kid turns around and says, hey, Teague. And I said, well, it looks like the pace is set there.
You bet. Wait till you're 30. Maybe you can change it when you're 30.
One kid, though, did say they might call me Dip and Dot. So it means some of them are listening, which is a scary thing. But I think that's going to be something we do as we talk about wrestling in the spring. I think I might talk about that because that's going to be a big part of my life as well. And who knows, maybe we have some track fans on, but right, yeah. On. So,
and you're the pole vault coach, right?
Pole vault. And I'm helping out with sprints and other jumps as well, wherever I'm needed.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was a fun first day, but we got team state to recap. So a quick milestone from team state, Braden Casey of Menominee, I believe it was in the first round, got his 150th career win, which, Steve, team state's an awesome place to get your 150th, right? I mean, you got the very last weekend you can get it. So that's cool stuff for him. Congratulations to Mr. Casey on ending a great career with a really cool milestone like that. So that's what we have for milestones. The lay of the land tonight, we're basically just going to talk about every duels. I'm sure we'll talk about our predictions a little bit, which I was 12 for 13. I think you were 11 for 13. So maybe we know what we're talking about a little bit. Also, though, our scores were pretty accurate for the most part.
Sure.
I was excited about that. I'm just going to let the Rockfin folks know what our order is going to be for tonight. Just like last week, we're going D1, D2, D3. And then afterwards, we're probably just going to talk about our seasons a little bit. And yeah, this one's a quick hitter, which is still an hour, but it's a quick hitter for us.
That's a quick hit. Yeah, an hour. It's crazy to say that an hour is short for us, D. That's something else.
We're just blessed with the gift of gab.
50% of us are, right?
let's get into it. Division One, we got the 1 versus the 8. Kakwana beat Homestead 49-17. Steve, the first two that we'll be talking about, we were on the call for these. So I think we're just naturally going to know a little more about the flow of the duel and whatnot. But hey, it was 9-7 after 4 matches. And I think even though Kakwana won a couple of the closer matches as well, I think it was the closest 1-8 matchup that we've seen since maybe almost even seeding started.
Right on.
And you could tell even early on in the duel, Homestead, I think they lost a couple at 144 and 150 where you kind of saw the Homestead Matt side and they were thinking like, dang, if we win that one, like maybe this happens. I think they came in with a game plan to try and win. At the very least, leave it all on the mat. And that was, for a 1-8 duel, it was very good, for sure. I think that's your favorite thing, right, Steve, is it seems the 8 seeds never back down every year.
That's it, right? That's what you want out of your team. I thought Ernie Millard, congratulations to him, by the way, goes out with a bang. It was kind of neat. Before I get to that, 4 wins by Homestead. I thought they'd get 6. You thought they'd get 6. I thought they'd get 5. But good news for them. Well, it was 27-14 before Kakwana got those 3 pins in a row that really just kind of ended it. Kind of put it out there. But you're absolutely right. We've seen 8 seeds come in and they could easily just throw in the towel, but they're coming in to fight. And this was the closest one that we've seen, Teague. And like I said, congratulations, Ernie Millard. Once again, it was neat to see him kind of once he knew that it was even actually before that, giving each one of those kids a hug as they walked off the mat, understanding that that was his last time was pretty sentimental. But the good news for Homestead, they have 7 wrestlers. I'm sorry, 17 wrestlers returning, 11 of them, Teague, 9th and 10th graders. So Homestead's got a pretty bright future after they made their first trip to Team State.
I will say, you talk about the hugs, the double Millard hug that almost got me.
Yeah.
That was a powerful one.
Yeah. 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 That's always a tough moment. It's I love the state tournament, both of them, but I'm a real sentimental dude and I understand when things are going to be last times. Right. And it's as you get older, I think you start to appreciate it more. It's like, man, you might never be here again, or I might never do this again, and that type of thing. And makes you appreciate Teague, not to get too crazy here, but when you see a beautiful sunset as you get older, you pretty much stop and recognize and say, that is a nice one. So,
hey, this is the episode to get sentimental. So, all right, going on to the next duel, Maguanagoa versus Menominee. And we put a lot of hype into this one, Steve, and I'll tell you what, it lived up to the hype and then some. Menominee, the Mustangs, their first time making it 2 with a barn, and they go 1-0. I mean, well, they start off 1-0 anyways, which is a hard thing because I think a lot of teams get there for the first time, and it's just you take in the atmosphere a little bit. It's really different than the Kohl Center for sure, and they stepped up. The conversation has to start with where the duel started, right?
Right.
106. Yeah, but Casey got – sorry. Oh, man, I'm just fighting the good fight with the voice right now.
You got it, man.
A Bailey Casey, a Gavin Meineke went to sudden victory. I mean, we were hyped right away. Kaseya got the 5-3 sudden victory win. And see, this was one of those duels, even after Casey got the win, as we were getting later into the duel, you were still thinking, like, it kind of played out how we thought in the upper weights, where there's going to be a lot of quote-unquote swing matches, where it's like, oh, Menominee still should, like, they should probably have to win this one. Like, sure. Almost every single match was considered a must-win, and there was 5 total pins in the duels, but guys had to battle for the majors as well. And yeah, this one was rocking. I mean, we have what, 1, 2, there was 5 matches that were by decision. 2 of them, how about the 6-5, 5-4 back to back at 150 and 157.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what, was it 5-4? Oh, it ended up 5-4. You're right. Yeah. That one, Adam Whittier versus Luke Pembertique. Whittier was down 5-3 going to the third. Takes down and gets an escape and a takedown for the win. That was pretty sweet. That brought the team score tight. But two in a row, I think it was a good answer, right? 157 was another one-point match. Walker Ferguson of Menominee, he was down 4-2. Common theme in this match, Teague, how many times did we say it seemed like the guy who got taken down first really came back and battled and made it interesting in the third? But he was down 4-2 going in the third, scores 3 unanswered in the third period. And then, like I said, that was a big momentum. That was big momentum-wise.
You know, I mean, just looking at the landscape of this duel, there was never a moment where a team won more than 2 matches in a row.
Right.
Which, it never really felt like the momentum was heavily on one team's side, but the crowds were awesome. The matches were awesome. I have to agree with John. This was all around one of the most competitive D1 team state tournaments. Like it was barn burners throughout. Even if the score didn't indicate at the end, there were some competitive matches throughout. And man, to be on the call for this one, there was a lot of exciting moments that came through with it.
Yeah, sure was.
And you got to see your boy Larry finish off his career with a pin.
Larry, gosh, he looked good, didn't he? He looked good. Yeah, but also, you know, going to Menominee. I always like the guys that go out there with a chance to seal it, because you don't want to leave it up to that heavyweight match. And Bryce Shepherd of Menominee getting that win to really just seal it for Menominee was, you know, shout out to him.
Bryce Shepherd, he also got the dual clinching win against Hudson in the team sectional finals. Wow. Going on to a Wisconsin Rapids versus Hartford, the 3-6. Steve, it was cool talking to the Hartford coaches. It was Coach Shimshack, who's actually a Lodi graduate. And he said it was cool to hear about how we talked about the lay of the land with the regionals and sectionals at the start. And then just how we slowly came to, and how the rest of the state slowly came to the type of team that they were. And he was just really proud of how their kids improved throughout the year, and they were pumped up to make it. But the final score here ended up being 41-22. Hartford was up at 1 point seed. They were up 12-0, but then Rapids rattled off 6 wins in a row, 4 of which were pins.
Right, right. Yeah, Teague and Aiden, hold on 1 second here. Hold on, Teague. Fill my time here. I know you don't. I didn't switch my duel. I want to make sure I got the name right.
Well, it was at 113, Parker 9.
No, I had exactly what you did. Was the big win streak that they had from 126. Rapids did from 126 to 157. Aiden Grokey at 215 gutted out a nice win, 2-1 over Grayson. Teague, is that Reimer? Am I looking at my Reimer?
Reimer.
Yeah, Reimer. Just to see that I like to see that, because when the duel is pretty much over and a kid still goes out there and fights out guts out a win like that, that shows big heart. Hartford loses 4 seniors, Teague. Only 2 of them are starters. And here's the thing. They are freshman and sophomore dominated is Hartford. So they're going to have a strong lineup. They are not going anywhere the next couple of years. I know you and I did not pick them in the offseason. We took in good faith. We took a lot of gruff for it. And that will not be happening next year. I can guarantee you that.
We'll see. I'll never make guarantees with picks.
That's true.
And the last duel of the first round, Arrowhead versus Muskego. This one ended up 47-24 in this rematch. Muskego ended up getting the victory, and I couldn't really tell you what happened because we were focused on the other two mats, but it seemed like Muskego really got things going early. And I mean, a nice win at 126 by Zielinski over Duchateau. I mean, Muskego got up 20-3, five matches in, and Arrowhead has their hammers, but Muskego's a really deep team to fall into a 17-point hole against.
Yeah, Teague, you talked about 126, 165. Mason Drought got the sudden victory win, so that was huge. It wasn't the difference maker, but dual-wise, but it was a huge momentum for them. And, you know, when six of your wins, six of Muskego's wins were by fall, that's pretty much that's pretty much going to cinch up the duel.
That will win you a most duel, yeah. I'm glad I did get a chance to talk to the Duchateau show himself one more time. Wyatt came up to the top while we were commentating for the D1 semis. We got to talk for a second. That was one of those, that was sad to see him graduate, right? Because I saw his first ever high school meet. I'm pretty sure, at least I saw him very young in his career. And he just impressed and learning that he was a good kid along the way. It's yep. Weird, Steve, being in the media, you still get attachments to some of these kids when you like get to know them more. Sure. And I'm glad I got to say bye to him, but hey, Classic 8 has to be proud. Three teams that made it to Team State and Muskego made it to the semis. But that's what we got for the first round. So going to round two here, we have Kakana versus Menam. And Kakana got the victory at 35-29. I know there was that forfeit at the end. It would have been Casey versus D. Piazza. Yep. But I still think you even take that aside. And I think this was one of Kakana's, like during their championships, one of their toughest second round duels that they've had. I mean, it was, if I have to give an MVP to Kakana, Steve, it might be Jackson Thorpe because he looked so good this weekend. Aaron Howard's a really good wrestler, the freshman from Menominee at 126, and Thorpe got a controlling 5-1 victory over him. And sure, that was a match that I think Menominee needed if they wanted to win this one. But here's the thing, I think Menominee, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you think of ways that you could have won the duel, but to go against the three-time defending champs and think, here's how we could have wanted to know that you had a chance, that's absolutely awesome for the Mustangs. And it was a really good duel. I mean, Menominee started off with a 9-0 lead, and then Kakana won 7 of the next 8, and that was right. That was just tough. That 150 match was really tough, too. Credit to Colin DeGroote for his come-from-behind victory.
Yeah, Teague, one of the cool things you always talk about, and I've kind of stole it now, pretty much. I'm going to stop giving you credit, but I love when you say the path to victory. Menominee did. They battled, and they did have a path to victory, but they needed a lot to go right. I think they wrestled one of the best duels they possibly could. Teague, they have turned a lot of heads this year, only losing 4 starters. Coach Ryan Lubeck has got the Mustangs, like I said, in a really good spot. I always like to watch coaches afterwards, watch how the coaches interact. And Ryan Lubeck and Jeff Machek met in the center, and you can see Jeff really giving that, he's a great sportsman, understands great competition, and kind of gave the nod and the point to Ryan as far as what he's got going up there in Menominee.
Oh, wow, Steve, this was awesome stuff. Shane Becker commenting in the whole Menominee high school team. I think they stayed in town. I think was middle school team state. Was that in Verona?
Verona, correct. Yep.
Yeah, so they went to Verona to support the youth program, which is awesome. That's incredible.
That is sweet. Yeah, I was when I was leaving, heading back to my car, I saw the Menominee kids. They were getting on the bus. That means they stayed and watched, wrestling the next day as well. And they were getting on the bus. A lot of good energy happening. Good, seems like a group of kids that really like each other.
Going on to the second duel, Rapids versus Muskego. I got to try to get the lay of the land here, but it seems like Rapids, through the first 9 matches, I mean, let me do some quick math, 15, 20.
Well, Teague, while you're doing that, I did do some math. It was 16-15 Wisconsin Rapids at the half.
And then they picked up two pins to go up 28-15. Looked like that was a nice win by Jacob at 6-2. But still, one of those decisions where it could potentially swing things. I think we were pretty close in on what our result could have looked like for that one. And maybe kind of the same as Menominee-Kakana, where Muskego may have almost needed a perfect duel to get it, but Rapids just picked up a lot of bonus points. And when you score 37 matches in a duel like this where it's going to be 7-7 or 8-6, that's going to win you a lot of duels.
285 battle of two state qualifiers. Teague looking through Muskego's lineup. Always like to see the team that lost and see where they're positioned for next year. They have a lot of juniors coming back in that lineup. And you know what juniors become, Teague?
Seniors.
Hungry seniors. So a lot of these teams that were at Team State are most likely going to be in the running for it again next year.
Also, the one moment that caught our attention, was it the pin at 215? Where it kind of kept Muskego in it, and that's what made the duel go down to the last match as well, which Cooper Herzig's a good wrestler, but asking for a pin against Deegan Armagos, that's a huge ask. And it's always fun when a duel goes down to the last match anyways, because anything can happen, right?
Right on.
And then Steve, the one duel that we happened to not do, because I was on D3, you were on D2, but Kakana versus Rapids in the finals. The Galloping Ghosts win their fourth straight team state title. They beat Rapids at 36-27. You can take out, Cole Tom checks a starter, but I know Kakana, they put in a reserve at 215, but it looks like Kakana just got out rolling. And Rapids, I think they maybe had a hard time staving off bonus points as well. And even again, at 120, Landon Freeman's a really good wrestler, and Jackson Thorpe gave him a 5-3 sudden victory. Give Thorpe the MVP of the team state tournament for the Ghosts.
Do you have an official award, Teague? Anything you're handing out?
I can't think of one off the top. Someone did send me, if we do like a fun awards episode this year.
Oh, and sure.
They gave me a good list of ideas, but that's something we can talk about later.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, guess what are your thoughts on the duel with your maybe not?
Well, shout out to, I always like to look to see who's the guy that clinches it, right? Brady Springer's win at 175 was the clincher, even though, I think the duel was starting to get out of hand then, but that was the clincher for it. Kakana, they're losing five seniors, only two starters on that program, Teague. I think I didn't pick them this year. I don't want to say I didn't pick them. I was kind of going for an upset because they only had six starters returning. Obviously got to be one of the favorites coming back next year, only losing two starters in that. But a shout-out to Kakana as well, Teague. And we mentioned this throughout the time. That's three seniors who stayed with the program even though they weren't starters. That says something about what they're doing, right? Because the kid normally – kid starts to get to be a junior, senior, and they're not going to be on varsity. They might, take a hiatus, and that says a lot about their program. Wisconsin Rapids losing five seniors, four starters, but Teague, 10 juniors in their lineup. We just talked about that. Juniors become seniors, so Wisconsin Rapids still sitting in a pretty good spot for next year. And I don't know if you said this in the beginning, but congratulations, fourth in a row, Teague. So that means we're going to have Coach Machek on for the fourth year in a row. For state championship coaches,
we're gonna have to really start diving deep into some questions.
Yeah, start talking to his wrestlers and find some stuff that maybe he doesn't even remember.
Was I gonna say? Oh, Jordan Bartlett, the senior who wrestled the last match, one of those seniors, Steve, that was a reserve and got to wrestle. So that's awesome that they did have a clinch at that point and they were able to. They were able to get him in a match. But, Steve, to think that there's a senior class where all they know about the end of the year is winning team state. That's the only result that they know.
Yeah, senior class that is not as four team state trophies is or team state medals is crazy.
We're going to Division II, where we got to call the D2 action. Apologies to the folks who were watching on NFHS, but as you'll find out in one duel, Luxembourg-Uwascom, there was some fun matches. 285 Eversman versus Salentine. It was 4-3 at the heavies, but man, Luxembourg just wrestles so well. I mean, Racer and Bostwick, that was a fun match. Immel and Bastion, and that's a lot of place winners. Steve, sorry, I don't think Racer ended up being a place winner, but that's a good win by Racer,
right,
to end off his season. So Kiwaskum gave some good battles, but Luxembourg, they just wrestle really well at this stage. Delabrew and Scholes got another match, and Delabrew won 4-3 at this time around. I think you kind of talked about it a little bit with Kiwaskum. They are going to be very hungry coming back next year, and it's not even a lot of juniors. It's a lot of freshmen and sophomores.
Right on. Yeah, Teague, you talked about it. There was 4 1-point matches. So it really, I mean, on paper, it looked like a blowout, but there was a lot of better. It was better in person. There was 4 1-point matches. You talked about Racer, also Immel, right? I mean, that was a rematch of quarters at state. It was 13-2 then, obviously a 1-point match. But here's the thing, team. We talked about team wrestling. Immel goes out there when all the momentum is going again for Luxembourg Casco, right? Bastion comes out and flying high from his team, just rolling things off. And for Racer and Immel to try to, like, stop that momentum and get it back on their side, just a lot of credit for them, shows their heart. So, and you nailed it, Kiwaskum. Losing a lot of seniors, but man, I tell you what, that those young fellows they have and the kids they have coming in, they're going to be a good program next year too.
Moving on to, oh man, Prairie du Chien versus St. Croix Falls.
Teague, I'll let you take this one. You got it all, man. You're good. I say that because if you watch the there's out there, you can hear our call for it. Obviously, it's pretty exciting. But what you don't see in this one, well, Teague and I are, I think both of us just start screaming at the same time. So nobody, I played it for my family. They're like, wow, you can't even hear what you guys are saying. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the point. But what you don't see is my son standing to my left and Teague standing to my right, and they both got shoved out of the way. So it was, Teague really did a good call, knowing that he was kind of standing on one foot, leaning to his right.
Yeah, Ray, PDC versus SCF. It was a tough one, to say the least. I just have to say this, Steve, sentimental value-wise, and we try to cover as many teams as possible, but we just happen to see a lot of St. Croix Falls and a lot of Prairie du Chien this year, and we both know what they brought to the table. We were both familiar with a lot of their wrestlers. And one thing, too, they're both highly, highly respectable programs. St. Croix Falls got the win 27-26, which is one of the lowest scoring duels in recent memory. I mean, still not lower scoring than Coleman Shiocton last year at team sectionals. But we knew it was going to be this grind them out type of affair, right? You look through, and over half of the matches are decisions.
Yep.
There only Nine ended up being 3 pins, which the biggest one came at the end. We could talk about all these matches, right? This kind of had the same feel as McGuanago Menominee, where every match felt like a must win, but every match also had that, like, oh, they need to get a bonus point here. They need to, like, save a bonus point here. And these were two teams that, I know you like to stress this, they know how to wrestle in duels. So you kind of got to watch those two just clash after it. And wow, I love the chess match at the end where Coach Mike Rogge, he lets Drake Peterson get the forfeit, and Jeremiah Avery goes up, beats Proc up 14-5. And that's one of those where Avery might get the pin to clinch it, which you put the duel in the hands of your stud at the end, right? Which I absolutely love that call. Proc up just wrestled really well to not give up the major. And we were thinking we were going to have to look up tiebreaker scenarios, maybe. We did not, because we knew that it was going to have to be a pin to win. And who else but one of the most clutch wrestlers in the state, Joe Petherbridge, gets the fall in 1:04. Go on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You need to watch the moment. You need to watch the call. It was just absolutely epic, because Steve, a lot of the talks going into Teen State before the seeding was who's going to win between PDC and Kewaskum. I think St. Croix Falls still seemed to be somewhat of an unknown. and they made themselves, I mean, very, very known after this weekend.
You got it. I don't know what to say with that. First off, I'll just say this too is, you know, obviously there's a winner and a loser, and Joe was the kind of hero on that one. And obviously there's another wrestler. TV read a very good rendition about the other wrestler on the mat last week. And I think everyone knows what I'm talking about here. And young fella, you will bounce back. And there one wrestler does not lose a match, does not lose a duel. Right. And it's just the way that's the way things go sometimes. Right. And you'll be stronger from this and come back next year. I'll tell you this is Prairie du Chien has entered status of a traditional power, right? And only the last, I mean, it took a long time to get there for them building the program, but they are considered a power in the state of Wisconsin for wrestling. And Teague, you mentioned both coaches, Mike Rogge and Joe Rager. Those two guys are, I can't think of two finer human beings than those guys right there. You know, Joe Rager, we've seen him talking to a whole bunch of different people, and when you can always tell by how people interact when they're around him. And Joe Rager gets that. Mike Rogge, when we had him on for the podcast, he was doing it at an establishment. People were coming up, walking behind him, and they were constantly, you could just tell the way they were talking to him that they truly love that guy. So like I said, it was tough to have one of them lose, but both programs are obviously in a great spot.
Owing into finals now. Luxembourg Casco won 36-19. And Steve, I was invested in on the D3 mat here, so I'm going to let you take this one away since you were on the call. But again, do you think there might have been a moment maybe after the 113 match where I may have been peeking over every once in a while where Luxembourg is like, oh, this one, like, we gotta make sure we take care of business here because these guys aren't going away easy.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I wasn't prepared. Normally, you kind of take it away, and just add a little bit.
I mean, that's all right. This was literally your duel.
Yeah, I was there. Well, you know that. I hit my head too many times. I can't remember a lot. But I there was so many competitive – I mean, the score really doesn't show it, Teague. There were so many competitive matches. I think that St. Croix Falls wrestled – as good as they possibly could to put them in a position, because I think most people coming into this were talking, right? I mean, we've said it, Luxembourg Casco, you know, they beat Kakana in a tournament, which doesn't mean head-to-head, but were they the best team in the state? And, you know, I think a lot of people coming in just thought this was going to be a blowout, and it really wasn't. I mean, was the final, is that 17 points, Teague, if I'm doing the math right?
Correct, yeah.
Correct. It's you know, there were some swing ones. Max Ronsman, Teague, I don't know if you got to see that or not, but Griffin Markle had Max Ronsman dead to rights and pulling him back in. And I don't know what he did. I think on social media they called that a – obviously it's a move. I've never seen that before in my life, what Max Ronsman did. But he took Griffin Markle's – he was down on the mat and did something and ended up on top and got the
two takedown. Didn't he like kick his ankle – not kick his ankle, but kind of like – foot swept him with the foot that Marco didn't have.
Yeah, sweep the knee, pull the Karate Kid, sweep the knee. But that was a turn. I tell you what, Trey Shanaback and Utgard, that was a great one. Utgard was winning in the third period, and he had Trace on his back for a while there. So, I mean, there was a lot of different things momentum-wise. But Sam Schutz sealed it with his tech fall, Teague. And this one was, like you said, a lot better on paper than what it looked like. And obviously Luxembourg Casco going up to Division One next year, St. Croix Falls staying in D2, so they won't see each other again next year. But like I said, as we've talked about earlier, all these teams at our team state are in a real good position next year. And Luxembourg Casco, that's two in a row, correct for them?
Yeah, yep, yeah, because it's Kakana 4, Fenimore 3, them 2. Although, Steve, there was a fleeting moment because – St. Croix Falls was down 11.
Yep.
Going into the 190. And I think Shanaback, I think if they wrestle straight up, Shanaback probably controls it a little more, but the goal is just not to get pinned at that juncture.
Sure.
But Mason Utgard almost hit what Coach Dusty Rager likes to call an Ut bomb. And can you imagine St. Croix Falls being down five going into that last match with Joe Petherbridge?
Yeah, Joe got that was a good match. Petherbridge, who knows? Maybe he only pins people when the match is on the line. But yeah, I was for a while there. I was thinking about like, oh man, could you imagine that once again it comes down to Joe Petherbridge?
It was a good duel, but Luxembourg, they have a really deep team with not a lot of holes, and it showed with the moves that they made. And I mean, shout out to Caleb Delabrew for going all the way up to 150 and getting a fall at that. So congratulations. Hey,
Teague, I'll answer a quick question. Michael asked a question. Who else is going up to D1? As far as I know, and somebody else can correct us, Luxembourg is the only team that's going up to D1. There's a lot of talk. Fenimore and Coleman, we know, are going up to D2. People have asked the question, well, what's up with Prairie du Chien? Because they've scored enough points. If they stayed D2, they would move up to D1. However, their enrollment is dropping, so they would be in D3. Follow me here. They would be in D3. However, their points are going to move them to D2. So they're not going anywhere. They will stay there. And then St. Croix Falls is the other one. St. Croix Falls, everybody thought, like I thought, oh, man, their enrollment-wise, they're going to stay D2. But they've scored 6 points over the last 3 years, so they would move to D1. Not true. Three of the points they scored 2 years ago were where they qualified in Division III. So those points don't count. So St. Croix Falls is staying D2 as well. So competitive balance, clear as mud.
A-plus analysis on the competitive balance. All right, going to a Division III. And again, we commentated D2, so didn't get a huge feel besides maybe one specific match. But I also can tell you, Steve, the Coleman Wauwega Fremont one, we're going to start off different here with the 2-3.
All right.
That one was about as much of a back and forth affair as you could ask for. Again, until it got to the 11th match, no one had won more than 2 matches in a row. I want to try to math out and see what the score is here.
I had 16-21 Wauwega Fremont after 8 matches.
After 8 matches?
Yep.
I got to say, Mike Akukta at the end of the duel, who weighed in at 65, wrestled 75, beat state qualifier, or I forgot if he's a place winner or not. Apologies, Carter. Majors Carter McDaniel, 14-2. That's an absolutely huge win there. I think Coleman, I don't think they had their starter in at 190. But nonetheless, this was just, I mean, sudden victory 4-2 at 120, 5-3 at 126. Coleman just won a lot of the close matches. And yeah, I mean, Connor Johnson did have a big win for Wauwega Fremont over Cameron Kimmel. This was the one match that we both predicted wrong, Steve. I know Coleman had a couple of guys that came back. I just have to say, I'm so happy to see Connor Markowitz back on a mat. I know he wasn't this one, sorry, but he did get that big win at 26, but Markowitz thought he was maybe going to be never wrestling again after he had that bad injury scare at the duels in the Dell. So that's probably one of my favorite stories. This duel was absolutely awesome, but the Cougars still remain undefeated over sectional D.
Yeah, right on. This one, Teague, I did have another one. It was 16-21 after 8 matches. It was 21-20 after 10 matches. So that's awesome. Our heads couldn't help but keep turning. It's really difficult when you're supposed to focus on 2 matches in front of you and there's so much going on to your right. And for good reason, we'll talk about it here in a little bit, but Coleman got 2 pins in a major from 157 to 175, which kind of put that one away. Teague, here is some good news for Wauwega Fremont Warhawks. They're losing a big one, right? Vanden Hoffman, but they're only losing 1 kid from this roster. So that puts them in a really good spot.
I'd say also shout out to Hoffman. For gets a pin over Kane Otto, who is just a monster of a human being.
Yes.
Hey, going on to Fenimore versus at Cumberland. Final score ended up being a 50-21. I'll still stand by my statement. Maybe, I mean, could there have been a path to victory for Cumberland? They would have had to wrestle really well. But again, just like LC, Steve, once they get to the bar, it seems these Fenimore guys all just really step their games up. And right, Fenimore, I know they made some moves as well, but wow, they were just absolutely impressive, winning 50-21. But did this have, we commentated one of the most exciting matches, but I don't even think we commentated the best match. Dawson Johnson versus Ian Crapp was 11-10 in the tiebreaker periods. And I think we went radio silent for about 15 to 30 seconds as we were watching what unfolded at 144.
That would have been both of us. I went radio silent probably for about, oh, I would bet you 2 to 4 minutes. I wasn't saying anything. I was just watching as T tried to muster a commentary for the ones we were supposed to be doing, because it was awesome, Teague. I'll let you walk through how this one went down, but here's my take on it. I thought it was the best match of two champs and champions getting after it I've ever seen, because this is like, I'm glad the coaches let it happen. It was honor to watch, and I'm like, man, come to Team State, right? I mean, like, people who missed out on this experience, I was kind of thinking about it a little bit. There's certain matches you remember. Like, I remember state tournaments. I remember certain things. But this moves into, I don't even have an order for these, but there's three matches now that I will never forget. I will not forget anything about them. And the first one is, and this is before your time, T, but Black versus Tritz. And it was 1998. It was one of, and the score ended up not even being that close, but it was probably one of the most intense matches I've ever seen. Two undefeated guys, one guy trying to stop a guy from winning his fourth, and the whole crowd was, everybody's head was on that match, right? And then the other one, and I don't know if this was before you or not, Teague, but this is another one the whole Kohl Center was on, Zach Anglin versus Macy Kilty. Zach Anglin from Bayfield and Macy Kilty from Stratford. It was a semifinal match. Everybody's head was turned on that one. I remember every single detail about it. I could tell you where I was sitting. I could tell you where I was sitting for the Black Tritz match. This one, Dawson Johnson, Ian Crapp, 2024, goes on that list. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I mean, the score was 5-5 after the second period. Well, keep in mind, at the end of the second period, Ian Crapp did unleash his inner Golden Eagle and hit a huge throw on Johnson. Picked up a couple near fall at the end. I think we called that on our broadcast.
We might have.
And Johnson, you see why he's a four-timer, right? He's an absolute gamer. And he ended up getting the lead. And there was a stall call. It was his second stall call in the period with 1 second left, which sent it to overtime, which, whether or not folks agree with the stall call, the fact that it went to overtime was everything I wanted as a fan. And then, Steve, the second injury time, and Ian Crapp had 47 seconds to get out, got to stand up, and then Johnson dove for a leg and scrambled. That has to have been one of the grittiest 47 seconds of wrestling I've ever seen from someone. Because you're right, thinking, all right, a state champ has that much time to get up. This one's basically over. And Johnson was able to hold on. I think Johnson rode Crapp then in the first tiebreaker period, and then he got the escape. Did they just go on their feet right away?
Yeah, I think he just put him up right away. He conceded the escape.
And yeah, I mean, even if it didn't go to tiebreak, like that match had everything you could have ever wanted in a match. And I just have to say, because I think we talked about it, we probably had to see that bump for Cumberland to win the duel. And I think there was a couple things that happened that helped seal the deal for Fenimore before that. But we still got to see the match. The match didn't have to happen necessarily at that point, I'd say. But props to the coaches, props to the two wrestlers, because I think they still have some say in that as well. Sure. For making it happen. I mean, Johnson put an undefeated record senior year on the line, and they put on a show. That was absolutely incredible.
It was absolutely incredible. And it's really, as you're watching, if you have anybody go back and watch it, this is what happens when two champions just absolutely refuse to lose. And they both are, I'm telling you that they are both champions. It's crazy. That's how good that match was, guys.
And the last duel that we are covering on of the year, Fenimore versus Coleman, I believe part three between the two in the state finals, the rubber match, because Coleman won in 2020, Fenimore won in 2022. The Golden Eagles get the win of 46-16. Give credit to Coleman. They were up 9-6 after three matches. I think a real big killer because, again, this was one of those duels where Coleman needed a lot of things to go right. Markowitz versus Tolleson. We had a lot of good things to say about the Fenimore freshman. Markowitz was winning 7-1, 7-2. Tolleson gets the pin, which, that could be a 9 or 10 point swing, but at that point in the duel, you know you're Coleman, you know you have to win that match. That weirdly almost felt like the dagger at that point because you know what comes up for Fenimore once they get to 144.
Right.
That may have been the match of the duel in that sense. I mean, 13 was really good between Owens and Kloss. Then I give credit to Coleman because from 44 through 57, I know Zanchavich was at 57 and not Stelt, but they only gave up 13 points, which is pretty good in terms of stopping the bleeding against those three for Fenimore. Tristan Stelt, Steve, we have to ask the people, is he the cerebral assassin or is he the professor? Because when you called him the professor, that just sounded so smooth. So maybe that's what just the way he made it look against the state qualifier was really impressive. And same thing for Kukta beating Blaschke 13-5, who Blaschke's a really good wrestler. And that's we got to see a lot of high end talent on that one, but Fenimore is just, it proved that they should have been, number one all year. I know they lost to IGH at one point in a tournament, but they got through the gauntlet of team sectionals. They came out big and 46-16 victory. They got the three-peat, Steve-O.
Right on. I didn't get to see much of that one, so I don't have anything to really commentate on. I will say this is that when I was a young coach and trying to get to the next level, coaches ask, well, why should I go to the state tournament? Why should I go to this if I'm not there? I tell you what, here's what you need to do. I would go to tournaments and I would watch how the championship teams warmed up. I would watch how the champions warm up, right? And if you want to figure out, Fenimore has a system down. They do something right. I spent the whole time watching how they warm up, and everything is with a purpose. The managers have a purpose. The backups have a purpose. The coaches, everybody's, what they do, there's a specific intent to it all. And I'm telling you, and not just Fenimore, but find a program that you want to emulate and take what they do, steal their stuff. And part of that is, like I said, their warm up and what they do. And before each wrestler comes out, it's a learning experience, right? It's they do what they, the reason why they are very good at what they do is that they're well prepared. And no wonder why they just won their third championship in a row.
And I just got to say, a great moment to end it when they did all the trophy presentation stuff at the end. But Asa Cutting, who is my absolute hero, it's clear to show how much respect he has from his teammates and the rest of the staff and the community. Coach Stelt gave the trophy to him, and the team got to surround him. And what a great moment for that senior to encapsulate his career. And that was awesome. I saw that on Facebook, and that, got me a little misty-eyed. But
that's cool.
Congratulations to Fenimore on the three-peat. It was some fun wrestling all around. I know the three champs that we predicted, maybe even to start the year, kind of ended up shaking out that way. But there was still good wrestling to be had, and there were still times where it was like, maybe these teams, it wasn't as totally clear-cut as we thought, right? And That's the beauty of this sport, is it's a long season, and there was teams that made some good runs, but ultimately the cream rose to the top at the end.
Right on.
But that's That's it. That's the season. Yeah,
that's the recap. Man, that's a season four, Teague.
See, wow. See everybody in 8 months.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right, right. Teague, I will say this before we do our close with a kind of a year recap, which, you know, mine's not going to be long, but my easy trivia question for you is, who was the smallest team enrollment-wise? Now, I'm going off of this book because I know these are a little bit different than what's in Doug Forsyth had, but what's the smallest team that was at the team state tournament? Well, who was the largest team at team state tournament enrollment-wise?
Coleman.
You're saying Coleman is the smallest?
Yeah.
They were not second smallest. Coleman, 229. Fenimore, 223.
And then the largest, I'm just guessing, I'm going to go with Muskego.
Muskego, I don't know what they were. I'll have to quick look them. Maguanago was second at 1619, and Arrowhead first, 2076.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah. Good trivia.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. I didn't spend a lot of time on that one. I apologize, folks.
I thought maybe you had a spoiler with your shirt there, but.
Oh, yeah. No, that was here. While you start a recap, I don't have much to eat as far as it's been a 1683. Oh, wait, 16. Oh, they're bigger than Maguanago. My fault. Muskego was second, 1683.
So I just got to say, first of all, I'm tired, but I think the game plan for us real quick while we still have people on, we did make the executive decision. We are going to do a bye week, which we were telling ourselves during team state, like, hey, maybe we just get into it. And then we decided it's, you know, high school athletes do it. Grayson Clark did. If Grayson Clark can take a week or a month to rest up, then the Wisconsin Wrestler Podcast can take 1 week off of podcasting. So I think I'm going to get settled into track. And then it just also gives us time to, you know, take a little break, flush the brains out, and get right back into talking wrestling with our four-timers and our state champion coaches. We've had more people asking. The demand to talk Freco stuff is higher. And I just got to say, my only concern with that is I just don't know a lot about the scene. I couldn't even know where to look for a schedule for freestyle Greco stuff. I would know where to find results on track when I know those are happening. If I got more into freestyle Greco, I would just ask for a lot of patience from people, and maybe it'd be a fun thing where I'm learning along with a lot of other people about freestyle Greco. So I'm not leaving that off the table this year, but I think one thing we're for sure doing, Steve, is we're going to be, I think what we really like doing is talking to people about wrestling and getting their stories. So I think we're trying to get a lot more a lineup of that. I know we're a little more inconsistent in the off season, and I think I want to get rid of that. I think I just want to keep the momentum rolling as we have this time from March to sectional preview season in September.
Right. Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
I just got to say it's just been an absolutely surreal year. It really seems like we find ourselves at this point every year, Steve. And I always feel it after state or team state. I'm like, how does it get much better than this? Right. And I find myself asking that same question yet again, but I think of everywhere we've been this year and all the teams that we were able to cover, the miles that we traveled, I didn't get a chance to look at it, but I will be posting that. But Steve, maybe we each do our own separate miles traveled, but sure. I'm really curious to see where that was. I made an executive decision that, you know, I was pretty all in before on covering wrestling, but this was the year I really wanted to do it and to kind of see the harvest being reaped, not only just from going all in this year, but just from the past years. It made me really proud of myself and us. Not to be braggadocious, but I think that's an okay thing to say, right?
Is that a word, braggadocious?
Our hard work's paying off, and it's so, there's so many amazing people that we've met over the years that whether they've been listening just this year or for the past 2 weeks or for the past 5 years, it really has been a fun ride, and I'm really excited to see where this thing goes. As always, Steve, I got to say, there might not even be a podcast without you. So I got to thank you. And it's been, I know I always like to take the stuff on social media and whatnot, but really, man, you are like the driving energy behind this. And it's always fun to be on the call with you. I feel like we're really getting into the swing of things. I mean, we started the season with a pin to win, and we basically ended the season with a pin to win. And there's no better way to encapsulate our season. So it was, I just want to thank all of you for tuning in and for your support and all the inside jokes and everything. It's been an awesome ride to think that we're only 5 years into this and to see how things could go going forward. It has me really excited.
I got nothing. No, I appreciate you too, man. It's I was on Brad Crook's podcast and I was talking about you. I'm like, man, I don't even know how I ended up. I mean, I know I ended up with you, but like, sometimes I wonder why you keep me around. I feel like you do all the editing, you do all the other stuff, and but you know what? We're a great partnership. We figure out where each other's holes are, and we go ahead and rock and roll with it. So, you got.
I got gaps.
Got no gaps. Got no gaps. So, but yeah, it's funny you said that. I was thinking about we started with a pin to win with Iowa Grant and Prairie du Chien, and we ended with one. Well, not ended with one, but close to it, right? And you know, the great people, Ernie Millard. I was thinking about you talked about we got to mention Rose. I know she doesn't want me to give her a shout out, but Rose is a fine human being as well. And I don't know. It's just there's so many things that we do where I'm just I appreciate it, and I can't think of me doing. I can't think of anything else I'd want to do, man. This is it's been an awesome partnership with you.
It's been a fun 5 years. Can't wait to see where the next five brings us. So thank you, Steve. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Also, Brooke and Carl Thorpe and Christina also agree there is no off season. Keep in mind when we say off season, it's like the Dr. Evil meme, like off season in air quotes. That's just, we're so into the winter part that's just naturally what we call it. So we'll get in the habit of calling it freckle season. But also, Brooke and Carl, are you Connor Thorpe from Beast Parents? Because that's absolutely awesome. Connor, I think, might have the most wins at individual state just with some of his backside battles as freshman through junior year. But that's it. We're getting to rambling. We're going to end this one in under an hour. But it was a great season. Sectional previews start again in September. But don't worry, we're going to have a lot of fun interviews. And maybe we'll get into Freco as well. But until next time, folks, thank you for everything. And we will catch you on the flip side.